Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm looking at you.
It's weird.
What is it like to do a podcast, this podcast at noon instead of 9 a.m.? It's strange. It's weird.
It usually means I don't get to eat lunch until like 1.
I'm sorry about that.
That's fine. I have a snack beforehand usually.
We'll just knock off early, go get a sandwich.
That's right. Exactly.
That's all part of the plan. Yeah, I'm in your house. I'm in your office
right now. Yeah.
Came all this way just to do this podcast.
It's dedication to a cause, really, mm-hmm. when you think about it.
That's true. No, I've been meaning to come out here for a while, and I had various motivating factors. It was like I needed the little grain of sand to mm-hmm. coalesce and make the pearl, and it was our friend John McCoy's exhibition that he curated at the McMullen Museum of Art about classic comics, underground comics, and mm-hmm. And it is running through next week. So I was like, oh, God.
Time is running out.
He gave me a deadline and I meet my deadlines. I've been trained to meet my deadlines. And so then it's great because I haven't been here since your wedding.
I was going to say, I feel like there were a lot of people like that's the last time I saw them because not only yes. was it my wedding, but then there was a pandemic after that.
There was an unfortunate incident at the wedding and we're never seen again.
I will not confirm that we were ground zero for the pandemic.
They disappeared, never to be seen again. So it's nice to be back. And for December in Boston, it's actually the weather's been pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say, interesting choice of a month to visit. But it's usually before it gets super snowy. You could have done worse and come in like February.
Yeah, when I visited my sister-in-law when she was in school here, it was actually kind of nice because it was snowing, mm-hmm. a fresh snowfall, and then an urban snowfall that's fresh is beautiful. Everything yes. in the city gets quiet and the snow is coming down. I was walking past these various parks in Cambridge on Mass Avenue and there's like, it's a grassy park, but now it's just a snowy park and it was all beautiful. My previous snow experiences had all been like New York City, 4 days after it snowed, dirty snow everywhere. And I was like, this is not good.
It's the year that we had like 4 feet of snow and it lasted till like, there was a big pile downtown that lasted until July. It just would not melt.
I had one of those. The hotel I used to stay at for IDG out in Framingham, mm-hmm. Their back parking lot was used as a snow pile.
Pile it up, yeah.
And it was just, I went there in like June and there was still snow.
Yeah.
And it's ice, never, basically.
It's snow, ice, and it's all gross and everything. So, yeah,
gross.
If you can hit that nice first snowfall, it's great. We haven't had that really yet. So, we still got time. But
so, you were busy this week.
Was I? Okay, thank God.
Well, I practically woke up Monday to two pieces on Six Colors from
it really went downhill
busy
after
Dan
that,
Warren.
Though.
One of which is about your e-ink smart display telling people that you are on the air currently.
Yep, which is just in truest fashion, not doing it right now because I think we're still in the lag window here for when it should update.
So we're gonna report back when if it flips to on air to tell us that we're on the air.
Yes, it should. Fingers crossed. But yes, this
was
my
mind. That's what you should do.
This was my I don't know why. I think this was my project like right after my kid was born, and I was like, I need something to just chew on that is not thinking about a baby. And I was, troubleshooting this, in between, childcare duties. I would get, 10, 20 minutes here and there and be like, oh, I'm going to hammer on this for a little bit. And it works pretty well. It has some, shortcomings, as were discussed in the piece. It updates every 5 minutes, so there's a bit of a lag. It's something I'd like to fix eventually, but I don't really have the know-how to do that. But it does do, essentially what I want, which is have a little, sign that sits on the door and can be updated remotely.
Attention, everyone. We are now on air.
And then
we
can wait for the 20 seconds while this display redraws.
Yeah, but it's
slowly.
Already, spoiler alert, it's already given away. It's these e-ink redraws are very funny in that they sort of draw it first, and then they pulsate, and then the drawing comes
gotta
back.
It's got to get the color, right? It's got to figure out which color is it. We're going to try every color until we find the one that we want. Well, if the air goes.
There it is.
All right, we're on air.
We're on the air.
That worked great.
Brilliant. Thanks to Listener Mihir.
Yeah, Listener Mihir gave me a lot of help with that, and Listener Mihir is listening. I can see him in the audience. And because I didn't know anything about Arduino, I didn't know what I knew it was a chipset. I didn't know that it required like its own IDE or anything like that. I think I had always kind of conflated it a bit with like a Raspberry Pi, like the whole thing that runs Linux. I was like, oh no, it's way more low level than that.
Well, I had had such success with my e-ink thing on the Raspberry Pi using Python that when it said, oh, you can also use MicroPython, I was like, oh, well, I could do that. And then I got into the weeds of using MicroPython on it, and it was like, oh, I don't think this is going to work. Yeah. Like, I just don't think this is going to work. So
yeah, so I ended up sticking with the Arduino IDE, which is basically C, which I've only done a very small amount of in my life, like just enough to be dangerous, but fortunately like the Inkplate team does provide a ton of really great examples which you can kind of crib from, and so I ended up like taking some from a couple different projects that they provide and sort of cobbling it together and trying to get down to sort of like the basic most basic level of functionality. And basically, you know, it runs every 5 minutes. It checks my server where I have a little file that has either a one if on air or a zero if off air. And then
or if two if by C.
Two if by C. I actually, that was a fun bit of, I have to, I struggled for a long time being like, well, the default state should be off air. So I started like with the variable in the file that's like, all right, it's a zero. And then realized that like logic, like from a logic perspective, like it would never change, like it was wrong. It had to be something that was not zero or one in order to correctly work. It's like when you initialize the variable, it's like, I guess I have to make it two, which doesn't mean anything because otherwise it will get super confused if it's zero or one. So that was a fun bit of like, oh yeah, programming.
Computers.
Computers are stupid.
They're the worst.
So yeah, learning that and sort of dissecting how to make that work was a lot of fun. But they do, I mean, you know, again, kudos to the Inkplate team. I think they made a pretty cool device.
Big fan of the, you can get a thing that is all the parts attached and in a case.
Yeah, right?
Like, because my e-ink project that I did, like, I would so much rather have somebody sell a Raspberry Pi and that e-ink screen already connected and in a 3D printed case that's made for it.
Right.
Like, I would rather get that because I 3D printed something myself and it's like it's okay, but like I'd really rather the people who are making the product kind of like design their own 3D printed case for it and let give me the option of buying it, because I'd rather have a whole product. I know some people don't want to do that and they're hobbyists, but I feel like this is starting to verge into the, you know, there are other people who might be interested in this tech, but the 3D printing slash, you know, soldering slash, you know, that is a bridge too far.
That's too far. I mean, and this, they like, I think it was like only like $20 or something if you wanted the version with the case. And for me, that, you know, that's a great, again, it's a great way to do it. Like, oh, you can buy the bare board if you want, but if you want to pay us $20 to like slap a 3D printing case on it, great.
I actually just bought, because I think I'm going to replace the Raspberry Pi that I'm using for my e-ink project with a which is a Pi 3 that I had for a while with a Pi 0W, because it doesn't need any more power than that. And so I'm thinking about all of that, like how do I move it and how do I do that and do I do a new thing with it and all of that, just to, you know, it, but it, it was, I bought it with the pins that need to go on the little port, the
GPIO,
in order to attach the ink display. And like, I found this Raspberry Pi for like some price where you just get it, but then you have to, if you want those pins, you've got to do it yourself. And then there was also a guy who was like, I'll just sell you, I've put the pins on it, so I'll just sell it. It's like, thank you, sir. Because, you know, I know that some people are like, no, I'll do it myself. It's like, I'm not comfortable doing that. You do that for me and I'll pay you an extra whatever dollars and you just make that happen. So it comes the way I want it.
Once you know, if it requires anything more than like the battery here is like a, like you can plug it in on the port, and like the most I was willing to do is like, all right, look at the schematic, figure out which one is the port, make sure I plugged it in the correct direction. Like that, all right, done. Like, close even at that point, there's just a, I mean, there's
battery
no place
rattling
to,
around.
Yeah,
in there.
There's no place to mount a battery inside of it. You're just like, all right, I'm just gonna press it in there and screw the case back shut, and it keeps it in there. It's like, well, hopefully it doesn't like, you know, touch something it's not supposed
to.
But yeah, it seems to work, and it's a nice little project. And
yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. So we'll see. Maybe I'll do a 2.0 at some point if I can figure out how to make it work a little more efficiently.
I think that's the question: is are there techniques to make it use less battery? So the battery life is longer, and then maybe are there techniques to make it more responsive, which in theory
it can go to sleep, but in a light sleep instead of a deep sleep, which will let it like keep the network on, but then the network will drain faster because it's running a Wi-Fi.
Right.
So like,
you could set a deep sleep schedule for when you never do podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's kind of the next level of this is like, I would have it like block out certain times. I keep forgetting my Mac goes to sleep after 5 minutes. I don't know why. But yeah, I need to figure out a way to do that, but like I'm happy with it at the moment. It does the job I need it to do, so everything beyond that is sort of gravy.
That's good. I like it. The other piece that you wrote was about archiving stuff,
right? Oh, everything's about podcast related shortcuts, Jason. That's our new bread and butter.
You know, I've actually refrained and from writing a follow-up to the podcast note script that I did recently, which was a funny moment where I am going to write it at some point because it's a year later, which is like next month, how I've changed my approach over the last year, sort of roll it into one thing. But the big moment was I realized that sometimes when I'm doing this, I'm actually annotating it. So I've got the little text file open in BB Edit and I don't actually, I want to occasionally take notes, but I also want the script to just keep popping out the little time codes. So I ended up in the situation where if I make a change and don't save it, and then the script runs, it either overwrites it or BB Edit actually pops up an alert that says, would you like to keep what you did or use what just happened? And I actually want both, so it's very bad. So my big update there is that after going to the bare bones, the BB Edit beta Slack and asking for a feature that might be a cool feature of like live file where it's aggressively sort of saving and loading off the disk. And so it's sort of always everything is just poured into the file. I realized I could also just make the script tell BB Edit to save before it writes. And that it's like, yeah, okay, that actually solved that problem. But you archived a bunch of subfolders, which is a good thing, and which then prompted me. I immediately wrote a note to myself of like, oh, I am doing this in a different way that is more efficient and faster, but uses a shell script that Marco Arment gave me that is a little bit impenetrable.
Right.
I wonder if I could build that as a shortcut, which I did then, which then I showed to you, and you don't use Logic the way I do.
Exactly.
So we have a whole other thing that has to happen. But it was a fun, I think these are good examples, because again, nobody has our exact issues,
yeah,
but I think these are great examples of how shortcuts on the Mac is super useful.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a really great technology, and I think this does two things. A, it shows you how good all the stuff on there is, so it hopefully encourages more people to use it. And B, it shines a light on the cases where there's things it doesn't do, and you're like, but we're all using it. Continue to extend this, right? Because that was the thing I ran into, is as you pointed out, like I use Logic projects, and the files are all my audio files are embedded within the Logic project.
Yeah, it's
and
in
it's
the
like,
bundle.
And you can't tell it, the shortcuts has no visibility into a package whatsoever.
Right.
So you'd have to probably go to the command line and say, like, treat it like a directory and iterate across it like everything else, which is doable. It's just more annoying.
Right.
Whereas you would like a shortcut action and just be like, look inside project files.
Inside project files.
Done.
Would be the trick. Yeah, the one I found doing this is that although there is this AF convert command line tool that is apparently on every Mac now, which I don't even know how long it's been there or whatever, but it'll convert audio into all sorts of different formats, and you don't need to install FFmpeg from Homebrew or anything like that. Because I was going to be like, I approached it thinking, well, surely there's I know that there's an encode audio shortcut action, so surely one of the options will be Apple Lossless, and I can convert all these WAV files to Apple Lossless. No, the convert audio only will do M4A or MP3.
And you guess that
or WAV.
Thinking,
no, M4A or WAV. Not even MP3, because that action predates the MP3 thing being
licensing
out of patent control.
And you got to think that that shortcut action is just really a wrapper around the AF convert.
Almost
probably.
Certainly. And it's like, well, they clearly, basically what's happened is they haven't updated it. But
yeah,
like that should be all that power of AF convert should be in that action. You should be able to pick from this, AFConvert has a huge list of file formats that it'll convert to. And that should all get wrapped in this action. So instead, I have to run a shell script, which is just—it's just dumb. And it works and it's great, but that should just be a shortcuts action. Right. There already is one; it just is missing all of the options that you should have.
And this goes to the point of a lot of things that we have talked about with Apple in the past, you know, couple months, especially, where it's like Apple likes to put out products and then be like, "Hey, we're done.
We're done.
We fixed it. We solved this problem. Goodbye." Yeah. And you're like, "But hey, you need to maintain this, right?"
And the shortcuts team, it's not like they're not working on stuff.
Sure.
But they seem to be working on new stuff. And that's one of the challenges that you also need to get back to your old stuff, right?
Who owns that old stuff, right? I mean, that's a thing that we've talked about in several cases, because it's like, all right, if you are the team developing an app that's, you know, one of Apple's built-in apps, if you're the notes and reminders team, right? Like, oh, is the shortcuts team job to implement all those new features that you put in notes and reminders in iOS 16? Or is it the notes and reminders team job to work with shortcuts? And I think, honestly, I don't think Apple knows. I don't think Apple has probably clearly delineated that. Mm-hmm. And the answer is, it probably shouldn't be the shortcuts team, because they have probably a ton of other stuff to do and they don't know all the ins and outs of all the different stuff. They don't know what changed necessarily in notes and reminders. And hey, we've got to update. They would just spend all their time doing that. And maybe the answer is Apple needs a team that just does that and looks at integrations and says every year, hey, we have rolled out new features in all of these apps. This team looks at all those and be like, hey, we need to like bridge this with the shortcuts team and update all this. But I think right now, unfortunately, that just slips through the cracks, which is a bummer. Because shortcuts is super cool and you can do a lot.
It really is.
It feels like you could do more.
And it, although it's not, you know, it's not for everybody, because it is a little bit, you got to figure out the way it thinks. But I would say it's more for everybody than like writing an Apple script was. And that's what's great about it, is that I definitely know lots of people who are like, I don't really want Apple script. I'm not going to do that and all that. But shortcuts is like, you can pick up a shortcut. And maybe it's something that somebody else has written and then you modify it. And like, but it is, you can get into it, because I think it is very understandable once you grok some of the weirdnesses of it, because it does have them. Like, I think the data type kind of coercion is one of the, which is, it's invisible. And that's what makes it a challenge, is that you're like, oh, I said to use this file, but how do I get it to use the file name? And the answer is, you have to click on the file and say, I want to use the name here.
Yeah.
And it just, it's invisible until you click on it and bring up the dialogue.
And
sometimes
it's just super literal too, right? Like, I had the action in there, which was like, make a zip archive. And it's like, great. Made a zip archive. And it's like, oh, you wanted that. Did you want that zip archive?
Did you want to save it
somewhere? Or you just want me to make it? Because I made it.
I wrote about that a while ago.
I remembered that. That is why I figured it out. I was like, oh, wait, I remember Jason writing about this.
It goes to
stupid.
An invisible, because I used to script the Finder, and it was like, you'd say, make a zip archive there. And it'd be like, yes, sir. Zip archive over there. Whereas in shortcuts, you say, make a zip archive. And it's like, yes, and? It's like, but what? And where is it? When I make it and don't save it, where is it? And I did have somebody write to me, I think from the shortcuts team, who said, there is a temporary file store. Or deep down in your library folder where that zip file is sitting.
Yeah, because it's got to go somewhere.
Temporary. But you got to, if you want to put it somewhere, you got to say, no, put it there. Which actually has its advantages, because in my script that I did, I'm zipping the logic project. And I was thinking about, like, I'm going to have to rename it and I'm going to have to do this and all that. Yeah. And I was like, oh, no, I don't. All I have to do is zip it, save that as a new thing, and delete the old thing. Yeah. And I there's no renaming involved, because the act of saving it lets me name it.
I did have a bizarre bug at one point where I think was not thinking through the logic again entirely, and it made this incredibly recursive folder structure in the shortcuts folder on iCloud Drive. And I'm like, this shortcut's taking a while to run. Mm. And I was like, wait, and where is it going? And then I was like, oh no, I found this whole thing, like path where it kept making a recursive path. And I was,
So here's another shortcuts feature request that I'll just shout out to the wind. Because they're probably not listening to us. But one of the other features that I noticed in writing this script is, I don't think any of Apple's scripting has ever done this well, but shortcuts should do it better, is updating me on progress.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I, at least some stuff, if you run it as a service, you see a little spinning gear.
Yep.
But some of them, you don't really even see that it's running. And that's really weird. And I would do, if I could do the extra work to say, put up a progress bar,
yeah,
and increment the progress bar every time you loop through it, I would do that because I look at my little shortcut and I think, I want a progress bar on screen for this. And there's no, I mean, you could use third-party apps
also,
to do it.
I will say, a thing I discovered while doing this, because I only had it set as a quick action, but I discovered that when I did the quick action, if I went to the shortcuts menu in the menu bar, it shows up in there, even though it's not marked as a menu bar thing, when it's running, like a little circle thing. But it doesn't tell you enough about it. It's just like, I'm working on it. And you're like, great.
And you could see how they could do it, because I know that there are scripting things that'll do this, but it's the idea of like, okay, display this on screen, and it's this many steps, and then in your loop, you've got a thing that says increment the counter by one, right?
Yeah.
And you make a little progress bar that says 5 files, 6 files, 7 files, process done, right? Yeah. Like, I would love something like that. And it, you know, it doesn't do that.
I mean,
so,
the other thing that came up with both this and with the last sort of shortcut thing I was doing, actually for the e-ink display, was the idea of and it blows my mind this doesn't exist. iOS version of shortcuts has automations. The Mac version of shortcuts doesn't.
So frustrating.
And you're like, but it's the Mac. Like, first of all, you'd sit there thinking,
there's a third-party app that'll do it, but like, why is that not?
I mean, but you're sitting there thinking like, but this is my computer that's always plugged in and always running. Like, it should be even easier to do automations on there than on my device that I'm super worried about the battery life running all the time. Like, why is this not a feature on the Mac? There's so many good things I could be doing with automation on there. And then maybe the answer is, like, it's certainly, there are more things you could be doing, and maybe they wanted to make a better version for the Mac and say, like, hey, it's more than just like, hey, here's your menu of options, right? Like, it was in something on, like, you know, Automator or whatever. I mean, I feel like there was some ability to do that. And certainly there are apps like Hazel or whatever that will do some automation stuff.
Plus
plus
the fundamental scheduling infrastructure that's in the system.
Right. You've got cron or whatever running on it and LaunchD and all this stuff. I mean, it certainly should be possible. But
I was listening to Connected, and Federico was talking about using my method that I suggested to him of having a Mac that's headless and having your stuff connected to it and then using Universal Control to move it over to your iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And he took that and ran with it, which is hilarious. But, you know, he's done all this shortcut stuff and he was talking about the differences between the Mac and the iPad. And one of them is that he's got, what is it, a Stream Deck attached to the Mac that is running push cut notifications that are going to his iPad so that he can, like, he sort of hacked this way where a Stream Deck button press does something on his iPad. And I thought, well, that's clever. But you know what would also be clever is if you could attach a Stream Deck to an iPad.
Right.
And the answer would be they would need to support global keyboard shortcuts for shortcuts.
Sure.
And they don't. Apple doesn't do that. So that, you know, and there you could also use the keyboard, but like if you did keyboard shortcuts, then that would solve the Stream Deck problem too. And I appreciate that, Federico. I have some other thoughts. There might be some other ways for him to like kick off iPad actions from a Stream Deck, depending on the apps he's using. But I love how clever it is. But again, it does bring to mind like, well, what if you plugged that Stream Deck into the iPad? And the answer is, well, nothing, because there's not even a concept of how that would work.
Also, I think the one I have is just USB-A, so I can't even physically get it in. They got to make a USB-C one, guys.
Just get an adapter for that.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, Apple put a USB-C port on the iPads, but it's still very limited in terms of, you know, even though you've got a Thunderbolt port on that, right? Like, in theory, you should be able to plug in anything, but like the software just doesn't know.
Right.
You know, it's got a small category of devices it works with. I was amazed that this interface that we're using right now, the audio interface, the Vocaster that I'm recording on, actually does work
with the iPad,
pretty well. But even there's software problems, as I mentioned in my review. Like, it's so close to being able to do, like, you know, recording a podcast that is on the iPad, but it has to still go through this weird trickery in order to make it work the way you feel like it should work. So, yep. Yet another shortcoming.
Shortcut coming.
There we go. Titles.
Is it like Omar?
Yeah.
Coming.
Shortcut coming.
Come with the shortcut you best not miss. That's with an Apple script.
Man's got to have some code, preferably written in Python or something.
Or not on C. Yeah. Don't do that. What else? Is there anything else? I mean, this is the week after Thanksgiving. There's not a lot going on.
It wasn't a ton. I mean, we talked a little bit, you know, there was some other stuff. You read the thing about Mastodon that Federico was doing the redirecting.
Oh, yeah, another shortcut, right? Yeah. Which was you know, I guess Tapbots is testing a Mastodon client now. And God, that
I want to see if anybody's listening who works at Tapbots and wants to get me.
Yeah, because the test flight is full.
I know.
I got the link, but it's full.
I know. I use Tweetbot all the time. It is my Twitter client. I would like to use this on Mastodon.
So a lot of that stuff can be mitigated, but if you're in the web interface, the problem with the federated nature of Mastodon is that if somebody sends you a link to a post on Mastodon and you go there and you read it and you want to reply to the person, well, you're not on your instance, you're on their instance viewing their post. And so if you click reply, what it does is it says, oh, you're not on this instance if you are logged in. If you aren't, click this button to copy the URL of this post, then go to your instance and paste it in the search field, and then you'll see it as the result, and you can interact with the post then from your own instance. It's like, that's unacceptable. And I tried to rewrite the URL with like a bookmarklet or that rewrite plugin for Safari that I found, and you can't do that because the IDs are per instance, and there's no way to just rewrite it. You have to use the search field, right? You have to use that search field. So Federico figured out, and I was messing around with the API, but I didn't, there was something about it that I didn't understand because the documentation that I found was incomplete. But he figured it out. So he wrote a shortcut that basically allows you to find a post on some other instance and then run the shortcut, and it basically pops you into your instance with that post. So you can reply to it right there. Of course, all of this is taken care of if you use a client, right?
Right. I was like, I've never, you were talking about it, and I was like, oh, this is weird. I never went into this, and I realized I only ever use the clients.
Yeah, and this is a piece that I actually wrote down. I don't know when I'm going to write it, but I've got, it's nice after I'm accumulating story ideas again after that period when all the new Apple stuff was coming out, where it's like, that was completely my focus. And one of my thoughts was about, I was listening to ATP talking about Twitter and Mastodon while I was walking over here. And it struck me that the only social media that I have ever truly embraced is Twitter. And it's because Twitter has, for me, has always had a client app on the Mac and on the iPhone and iPad. And the reason that I used Twitter and never really used Facebook very much was because Twitterific was an app. Facebook was a page I went to in a web browser.
Right. I mean,
and I know on the phone, Facebook is an app, but I'm at my Mac most of the day. And Twitterific staying open, or you know, being in my dock, I would be like, oh, let's check Twitter. But I never went, oh, let's open Safari and go to Facebook. And I know that that's a weird mental model to have, but for me, I think that's the truth of it, is the existence of a Mac desktop app for a social media site is the reason that I started and continued to use Twitter.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now because I was thinking about this. I was like, you know, that's a great point, because I was like, when did Twitterific 1.0 come out? And I was like, January 2007. Yeah, that's exactly when I signed up for Twitter. In fact, I'm laughing because I Googled it to look it up, and I found the hit from it was on Engadget, is the story from January 2007 by
Scott McNulty.
I was like, oh, and that, I remember that interface. Oh yeah, that was classic.
Right. And the context of that, it was always, you were just completing your name with what you were doing. Scott,
yes.
McNulty,
oh,
is checking,
God,
out Twitterific.
Yeah. Oh boy. Wow. See, Twitter came a long way in 15 years, and perhaps too far, some would argue.
I would say Twitter came a long way in about 4 years, and then for 11 years, it didn't go anywhere. Yeah. And then it went somewhere bad.
to the bad place. I agree. I mean, and you know, I think back to, I mean, I will say this to Tapbots. They've been really, I think they've always realized that being tied to Twitter is a bit of a poison pill. And like, that is a challenge for them. The biggest challenge they have is, we're tied to Twitter, but also like, the app depends on it, right?
Yeah.
And so if you remember, they also had NetBot briefly, which was the app.net client.
Yeah.
And it's like, they've been trying for a long time, I think, to realize like, hey, we have a good app. The weakness is the service that it's connected to, and the fact that we're beholden to that. And I think smartly, they're looking at Mastodon and saying like, well, you know, for better or for worse, at least this is an open source platform that nobody really owns.
I also think Paul Haddad personally is done with Twitter.
It makes me sad because my tweetbot hasn't been updated in a super long time. That's like, I get it. I mean, I would not invest money in that platform either at this point.
Well, our friends in the Discord say that the Apple limit is 10,000. Developers can set it lower, so they should just set their limit higher.
Yeah.
Take that, Tapbots. No, I agree. And, you know, I'm a Twitterific user and not a Tweetbot user, but I would absolutely use Ivory, I think is the name of it.
Yeah.
Especially when there's a Mac version of it. I do hope that Icon Factory is looking at it, and I understand it's a lot of work for something that's speculative, but if Sean and Craig and those guys are looking at it, surely there's a lot of infrastructure in a Twitter client that can be reused in a Mastodon client, that it's there's an API layer and there's probably some nuance of some of the items that need to be kind of shown or hidden or modified in some way. But I would hope that it would not be, like writing a new app, that it would be like modifying your existing app. And I'm worried because I do use Twitterific. And I'm worried about the service and I am worried about their commitment to their third party API in particular, I'm also worried about the developers of the app that I use to connect to that platform being, it seems, pretty down on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because why would you, why would you even continue working with that app? So that's that concerns me. I'm not entirely convinced that Mastodon is going to make it, although I think it's more likely now that the subset of the audience of tech nerds that was there in the early days of Twitter,
keep at least a low level of,
my sports writers and the people talking about like national news and stuff are going to be on Twitter probably,
I've seen some people on Mastodon, which is actually nice, but it's not a wholesale shift, and
the tech nerd group may very well just stick there.
May I suggest also, I'm sure Icon Factory again listening too, but I don't know. What do you feel like? Elephant-terrific? Like, what do you call it? Like, you need a good name.
Elephant-terrific. I mean, maybe.
Do that or Masterific.
No. Yeah,
it doesn't sound good. I don't like that. Tutorific?
Mammorific?
That sounds weird. Also, Tutorific, I don't think is great either.
No, don't do that. That's for tutoring. That's a tutoring app.
That's right. Yes. Although you could call it TOO, like it's terrific, but it's too terrific.
It is too terrific.
There you go. Craig,
don't
free.
Do that.
That's free.
Sean, steer away from that idea. They're probably not listening either. Just like the Shortcuts team just got here, and they're like, they're not talking about us anymore. Like, this is a radio show. All right. Well, it's great to be here. It's great to see your face.
Yeah.
I did see you back at WWDC, so we've seen each other.
That's true.
All of that. But still, it's good to be here. And thank you to everybody out there for supporting Six Colors and being a part of this thing that we're doing. And we'll be back next week, and I'll be back at home. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.